The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello and welcome to the Miles to Memories podcast. I'm Sean Coomer, your host, joined by Joe Chung from As the Joe Flies and Disney Deciphered. It's been a few weeks, Joe. Glad to have you back. It's been so long since I've seen your face.
Yes.
Even though people are listening to this and not watching it.
Thankfully, no one else has to see my face except for you. But how are you doing, Sean? We've both been traveling to places that people hate to hear us talk about.
Yeah, we're going to talk about, I went on a Virgin voyage. I want to talk about it because it's definitely different than any cruise line I've seen. And there's a lot to talk about, good and bad. So we'll talk about that later in the show. But went to some cool places and I've been back home for a little bit and then heading out in a couple weeks. Where were you off to?
So I was down in Walt Disney World for a social media event. They invited Travelmation, my travel agency, down, and Travelmation sent me. So thanks to them for that. And the main thing I was down there for was to check out Tron Lightcycle Run, the new attraction in the Magic Kingdom, which I know you have checked out, Sean, in Shanghai. Got to ride it twice, and yeah, it was a lot of fun. Sean, I know you like it better than Guardians of the Galaxy Cosmic Rewind. I think I also like it better than Guardians of the Galaxy, but for different reasons. It's because, you know, a 1 minute roller coaster is more my speed. 2.5 minutes on Guardians is a bit too long for me. But yeah, thank you again, Disney, for the invite, and Travelmation for sending me down. I paid for my own flights down, but Disney put me up in Coronado Springs, a moderate resort, and also gave me a little bit of money for food. Didn't cover everything, but it was pretty nice to have that. Great ride, great addition to Magic Kingdom, which definitely needed more rides. I know people are being negative about it, but people are always negative in the Disney community for no reason.
Yeah, it seems like I'm always on the wrong side compared to a lot of Disney fans, but I definitely think Tron is a better ride top to bottom. I just see Guardians of the Galaxy as an updated Space Mountain, which is fine, but I don't think it broke any ground on that. Not that Tron is anything revolutionary. And I talked to a friend, my friend Dave, who I went to Shanghai with on one of my trips there, and we rode it together. And he said that the Tron in Magic Kingdom is exactly the same. Once you get inside the building, everything from the pre-show to the station to the layout, it's 100% the same. The entryways are a little different because in Shanghai, Tron is sort of the centerpiece of Tomorrowland. And here, you know, it shares that billing with other stuff. So, yeah, it's good to see it open. And I can't wait to ride it, hopefully in the next couple months down in Florida. But it's always been a fun ride. It's a little short. I can see that criticism of it. But it's fun, very rewritable, and a great addition. I mean, hopefully this means that Space Mountain there will get some love now that they can take it offline and maybe smooth it out a little bit. I don't know. Space Mountain getting rough in Magic Kingdom, but the MTM podcast drinking game has already started with us talking about Disney, of course. So I know that people are going to love that. They're going to be drunk by the end of this with Disney and cruises.
Yeah, we'll give it a little rest and talk about cruising only in the end. But yeah, the other thing I got to do for the first time in a long time was take a Lyft, and went ahead and did that. Didn't rent a car like I normally do, because Terminal C, as I've said before, I think is super annoying. There's no car rentals there, at least for Hertz, which I typically use. And so instead, took a Lyft both ways. That was good. And yeah, it's just nice to see in general, it seems like the infrastructure in Orlando and in general in Florida is improving. I mean, Orlando Airport, I guess this is an infrastructure, but there are more connections to Orlando today. JetBlue just announced a new flight, direct flight from Worcester, which is an hour and a half west of here, to Orlando. And then I know Redway, which is like a low-cost carrier that I hadn't heard of before, is going from Lincoln, Nebraska to Orlando, is going as well. That's going to start soon. So just in general, Central Florida tourism is booming and increasing, no matter what anyone has to say about the effects on Central Florida tourism. So it's going well despite all the controversies that are going on, and that's all I'm going to say about that.
That's your anti-universal bias. But Universal isn't bringing us. No, I'm just kidding. Of course, Disney is the king there, and the tourism industry seems to be doing well there, even though all the crazy news about Disney and the changes with the government and all of that. This is not a Disney podcast, so we won't talk about that. This is a travel podcast. You forgot to talk about Brightline. That's coming this year, the high-speed train down from Miami. It should be all the way to Orlando International Airport before the end of this year. I don't know if they've announced an exact opening date yet, but they're pretty close to being finished.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. Would have been super helpful for the cruise that we took out of Miami after our stay in Walt Disney World back in February. And I think that's just going to be great for Florida in general. Another way to connect. It's going to make life a lot easier. And of course, my son is super excited about a new train to try.
I wonder what the impact on toll revenue on the Florida Turnpike will be with everybody taking the train. But it's not going to be cheap. It'll still be cheaper to drive, especially for families and stuff like that. But it'll be cool to have that high-speed rail there. And, you know, being from Vegas, that same company is getting ready, and hopefully by the end of this year, to start construction on our line between LA and Vegas. So Brightline, the only company really seeming to bring any sort of high-speed rail to the United States. And it's been a long time that they've been building this. Eventually, it's supposed to go across Orlando, have a stop on International Drive near Universal, and then go all the way to Tampa. So hopefully they get that done. But this is a big extension, because right now it stops in West Palm Beach, I think. So bringing it from West Palm all the way to Orlando International Airport really will help connect Florida for, like you said, people doing the theme parks and then heading to the coast, doing cruises. It's a good thing, I think, for tourism there.
Yeah, one more thing that you reminded me about the tolls that I forgot to talk about from my February trip was, you know, I bring my EasyPass transponder down to Florida with me now, because all the way up and down the East Coast, you know, transponders, whether it's EasyPass, Fastlane, SunPass, whatever, they all work. And I forgot to add it to my car until I was driving, and, you know, my wife added it to the car as we had already started to Walt Disney World. And then I found out that I ended up getting charged for the tolls. After that, for the rest of the trip, I wasn't charged for any tolls, and it was just those beginning tolls. And so just a reminder that if you're going to bring your own transponder, add it early. Make sure you add it like before you pull out of the rental place. You know, I got to follow up and figure out if I can get my money back. I mean, it's a little annoying. You know, you pay an extra fee plus the tolls themselves. At least it's not super exorbitant, but yeah, just a reminder for those of you out there, especially those of us on the East Coast who already have our toll transponders. If you're going to use them elsewhere, make sure you register your rental car or whatever.
Also, remember to put an ending date on your rental car and then the check to make sure it comes off your EasyPass, because that happened to me about a year and a half ago. I did put the end date. For some reason, it didn't stick. And for 3 days after, somebody driving the car kept charging tolls to my EasyPass. And when I contacted them, they said, you didn't properly put that in and we're not going to refund your money. So I was out like 15, 20 bucks. The other nice thing about renting a car down in Florida now is the rental car companies, or at least I know National, has really lowered their fees. So they charge $4.50 a day to use the service, but it's all toll by plate. So you don't really need to have a transponder. You just pay the $4.50 plus the cost of the tolls, which sometimes I've rented a car, you know, for 5 or 6 days, but I know I'm only going to use the toll one day. And so if I don't have the transponder, it's a small fee to pay, because there's very few cash booths left. I think on the Orlando International Airport, that toll road going towards Disney, they do have cash booths still. But like the Florida Turnpike, a lot of the toll roads in Florida do not have any cash options. So you're basically going to, you know, incur whatever fees from the rental car company. So know what those are. And then it really is cheap to buy a transponder if you're from like the West Coast like me, where you don't have, you know, tolls. We don't have toll plazas and stuff, so I don't have my own transponder. So I did buy one for Florida, although on my last couple of trips, I just haven't brought it because I had such that bad experience where I got charged. So I hate tolls, Joe. I hate tolls. That's such an East Coast thing.
Sorry, I can't relate. I'm from New Jersey, where we identify by our exit on the toll road. So I'm not sure what else I can say. I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah, growing up in California, we have so many freeways. And that's the only word I ever knew. You know, we just called everything a freeway. And now there are a couple toll roads down in Southern California, But, you know, freeway was always that. So when I went to the East Coast for the first time, traveled the country, I've always been bitter about paying tolls, but I've gotten over it with time. But it's not my favorite thing, especially when it's on an interstate. It really upsets me because the interstate should be free, I think. But I'm sure there's other people with different opinions on that. All right. So, Joe, let's talk about miles and points for a second. And it's the second quarter. It's April. And all of the rotating Category 5X cards like Freedom Flex, Discover It, City Dividend have new categories. So we figured we would just let people know about that. So, Joe, what are the categories and how are people going to maximize them?
Yeah, so Chase Freedom Flex, it's going to be Amazon, Whole Foods, and Lowe's. I mean, Amazon is a little annoying these days because you can get 5X elsewhere via Amazon, but, you know, it's an option. The Discover It card is going to be restaurant and wholesale as the categories. And then City Dividend, which is a bit of a dying breed, is going to be grocery and drugstore. So a lot of options there depending on which cards you have.
Yeah, agreed. Amazon, you know, I just remember back in the day when I used to be so excited for Amazon. And then now I do have a 5X card. It's just not as exciting. So yeah, I mean, nothing that's too exciting. I don't know this quarter. What is your overall favorite category when these come out throughout the year? What is the one that you see it? Is it, I mean, grocery, I think, would be the obvious one, but what is something that gets you really excited on these cards?
Yeah, it's definitely grocery for me. For a second, I was like, oh yeah, when it used to be 5X on online purchases, that was really awesome. But then I realized I'm probably just conflating that or mixing that up with the old AT&T Access More card, which was 3X on all online purchases. But yeah, these are not moving the needle for me that much. I mean, I feel like grocery is still the best because I can buy gift cards there. I mean, at Whole Foods or the wholesale clubs, you know, you can get Disney gift cards, but nothing super exciting. But, you know, it's good to have the option of getting 5X just on, you know, some of these purchases that we might make anyway, especially for me, like Disney gift cards.
Yeah, and restaurants at 5X are nice, but it's never been something that got me to like pull the card out and do it. I guess I don't have enough non-business restaurant spend to really, you know, get too excited about it. So it really is groceries. I don't know how many people have dividend cards anymore. We do know of somebody, PDX Deals guy. We're going to talk about his city retention offers in a second, but you know, it's good to see that there. And Freedom Flex, Amazon, I think it's fine for people. I think a lot of people probably don't have the 5X card. This is a nice way to lock that in if you don't do it any other way. You know, there's other ways to get 5X all the time on Amazon, buying gift cards like at office supply stores with a Chase Inc., things like that, but nice and simple here. And if you want the simplest thing, you know, you can reload your account, buy gift cards, and then lock in that 5X for future purchases if you know, you spend a few $100 a month on Amazon and you want to make sure you get that. So, you know, it's definitely something to be aware of. Speaking of promos, Joe, United launched their MilePlay promotion, their latest version of that. And this is like a targeted promotion where you can receive different offers. And the offer I got was book one trip, get 2,500 bonus miles, which I think is pretty decent if you're going to fly United. Some other people got, you know, book three trips, 15,000 miles, book four trips, 21,000 miles. They do have a minimum spend. Like for mine, it's $125. And, you know, the four trips is $100 each trip. But we'll put a link in the description. Check your account. See what you're targeted for. If you're flying United anyway, this could be a way to earn some decent miles, a decent rebate back on your spend.
Yeah, I just checked while you were talking, and I got the same thing as you, 2,500 miles for a flight. But for me, it's $200 minimum for the flight, and that doesn't seem worth it. I mean, my mileage running days are way past me, and 2,500 miles just isn't enough to move the needle for me. And I don't think I can figure out a flight that would even make sense by June. And yeah, I'm not going to just take a flight for the sake of taking it.
The other kind of angle to this is a lot of people have United Travel Bank credit. So if you're able to use that, it works for you. It's just nice icing on the cake. At least worth checking the link to see what offer they gave you so that you can figure out whether you want to do it or keep that in mind for your future stuff. So speaking of offers, Joe, I did want to talk about city retention for a second because it's been a while since we've talked about this. And PDX Deals Guy is a contributor to the site, longtime friend of mine, and he loves to get on these retention phone calls. And one of the things a lot of people probably don't know about city is that they will go through all of your cards even your spouse's card I've had, you know, you have to get your spouse on the phone to verify, but I've had them go through, you know, tons of cards on one call. He recently just did a call where he got retention offers on 6 different cards, 4 of them without an annual fee. And so I thought it was worth kind of discussing those. And there is an article on the site. We'll put a link so you can read in more detail. But basically, before we go into the offer details, you just call up like you normally would. Say, you know, you're considering canceling an account. Don't ever tell the automated system that you are going to cancel an account, because we know in the past people have had accounts canceled by the automated system where it just shuts the account down. So it'll transfer you to an agent if you say you're thinking about that. And then you can just sort of have a conversation with them about the first card. And then when they're done, say, can you check the other cards? And I've never had an agent say no, and they'll just go card by card listing what offers are available for your card. And many times there's 2 or 3 different offers from Citi. And this can be really lucrative, as you'll see as I go through this. Is this something that you've done quite a bit in the past?
Yeah, I was thinking the other day that I really need to do this and just clean up my cards, get retention offers or cancel or do whatever. And yeah, I love, you know, we criticize Citi a lot, but I love how with Citi, you can just go card by card, and it makes me want to call them more and be better about it, just because it's just so efficient and such a great process. So, you know, we rightfully give them a lot of crap, but this is one thing that they do right.
Yeah, and American Express will also do this. They will go through your cards too, although American Express is much more strict with the language that they have and be careful with taking an offer, canceling a card later. So you got to be a little bit more aware with that. But let's talk about this. So first card, the Citi Premier. Now that card comes with a $95 annual fee, but it's a really good card because it has uncapped 3x grocery earning, earns thank you points. Of course, it has 3x also at restaurants, gas stations, and on most travel. So it's a really good all-around card. The offer he got, spend $95 within the first 30 days, get a $95 statement credit, basically wiping out the annual fee. That's a card I have and keep, so I feel like that's a no-brainer on that one, just kind of wiping it out. There could be better offers for spending and stuff, but at least it makes it fee-free, gives them access to all of that without having to pay. And 2 other cards, AT&T Access More and Custom Cash. This was a good one, and this is an offer we've seen on and off over the years. Earn 2x thank you points on all spending for the next 6 months, up to 35,000 bonus thank you points. So that's 2x on top of whatever you would normally earn. Now, the Custom Cash has that 5x earning in your like biggest category. The AT&T Access More, as you talked about earlier, isn't a card you can get anymore, but it does come with 3x for all online spend, even though Citi, you know, messes with people. And a lot of times it doesn't code as online, even if it is. But, you know, getting an extra 2x is great. And, you know, that's just really icing on the cake, especially with the AT&T Access More, because once you spend $10,000 a year on that card, you're getting back, 10,000 thank you points. So basically the annual fee is wiped out if you make that spending on that card. So another great one, Citi Rewards Plus, 10,000 thank you points after 3,000 spend in 6 months. And the Thank You Preferred card, 7,500 thank you points after 1K spend in 3 months. And then the Citi Dividend, which we just talked about with the 5X categories, earn an extra 4% back for 3 months. So Dividend's a little different because it caps out at $300 a year. So in that case, he could spend $3,300 at like grocery stores this quarter, because that's one of the 5X categories, to get his 9% back to hit his cap. These are all really good. Like I said, 4 of those cards don't have an annual fee. The only ones that do are the Premier, which basically his offer erased it, and the AT&T Access More, which gives you that rebate after spend, kind of offsets the annual fee. So these aren't cards that he's paying a ton for. I still don't quite understand the business of what Citi's doing, but they've been doing this a long time. I think they just want you to get these cards to the top of wallet, and they're happy to do it. And like I said, the agents never resist checking the offer, so kind of leaving points on the table if you don't try.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, Citi's always been very generous with things like this. I mean, people, I think, used to call like every 3 months. I don't know if people still do that, but just to get retention offers, and that is great. Just a reminder, and is bears repeating, I know you said it already, but American Express, do not do the same thing with them. I mean, you can call and get, you know, all your cards done at once with retention offers. But remember, they're very strict about the whole hold your card for 12 months after the retention offer, or they might claw it back. I'm not sure if I've ever seen data points of them actually clawing it back. Not sure if it's fear mongering or whatever, but I wouldn't mess with Amex. They do not want you to cancel after you get that retention offer. So definitely be careful with that.
All right. So let's talk about Virgin Voyages, Joe. Now, I want to start with a disclaimer. So Virgin Voyages did invite me on this cruise, and I did not pay for the cruise itself. I paid for all my travel, paid for my hotel before. Also, there was no contract, and I was never told what to say. I didn't agree to say anything. As you'll see, I have some very negative things to say and some very positive things to say. So this is a completely, you know, honest review based on what I thought. I don't owe them anything for it. In fact, they booked me just into a guaranteed cabin. So my cabin got assigned, you know, 2 days before the cruise, and nobody on board appeared to know that I was, you know, on a media invite or anything like that, which I really appreciate. I hate when you go somewhere and I know, like, you just got with Disney, right? You get treated special. It's nice, but it doesn't really allow you to review something. Once you notice that something's off, once you notice that you're being treated differently, it sort of changes the whole dynamic. And there wasn't a single moment on this cruise that I ever got an indication that anybody knew I was anything other than a regular passenger, which was great. And like I said, I have a lot to say. My bottom line, I'll start with this, Joe. I have never seen, other than on my Mardi Gras cruise last September, I have never seen more people complain on a cruise ship than the passengers on this ship, while also at the same time, these same passengers booking again and wanting to come back. And I think that's the nuance we have to talk about with Virgin Voyages, because it is not perfect. It's far from perfect, but they're doing stuff that is really interesting and made me excited for the future of this cruise line. So like I said, we'll kind of go around the ship. I'll talk about the cabin, maybe some of the entertainment, the ship itself, the dining, and then maybe some other takeaways that I have. Like I had said before, I was booked into a guaranteed stateroom. Some cruise lines assign these, you know, a week out, 2 weeks out, sometimes even longer. Virgin's well known not to do that. And so they wait till the last minute. So it wasn't until really, really late, like a day and a half before the cruise, that I got my cabin number. And my cabin on one ship map says that it's an obstructed view balcony cabin. On the other, it says that it's a regular balcony cabin, but it basically sat right at the edge of where the lifeboats are. So if you look to the left, you could see lifeboats, but to the right, it was a clear view. And so it kind of amounted to mostly a normal balcony cabin. But one thing that Virgin did weird compared to any other new ship, and this is going to be a theme here, is they mounted their lifeboats above the promenade deck, which on all new cruise ships, they're mounted below. So that promenade deck is a great outdoor space. It almost felt like this ship was designed 25 years ago. And there's a lot of small issues with the design that I'll go through, but Virgin really prided themselves on taking people outside of the cruise industry to help develop this product. And it shows in some ways, which is a really good thing. In other ways, it's a really bad thing. The design of this ship has a few issues, which is a little concerning considering that they have four of the same ships, or right now two are online, with two more coming online by the end of this year, all exactly the same as far as design.
So there's two things I want to ask you about the stateroom. When Virgin first came online, they made a big deal about how the bed goes away during the day and turns into a sofa or something like that. I heard they're not converting it as much as they used to. So I'm curious your impressions of that. And then the other thing that for a veranda or a balcony room that people rave about is the hammock. So I want to hear about the hammock on your balcony.
So let's start with this bed turns to a couch. So they have the ability to convert your bed into basically an L-shaped couch during the day. Now, I don't know why anybody would want to do this, but you know, I did try it out just to see what it was like so I could talk about it. To start, everything in your room is controlled via a tablet. So it's all very tech driven and it's very good. It works really well. Your TV is integrated into it. All the lighting in the room is integrated into it. They even have LED mood lighting, which is really cool. You can have like, and they have different modes like Zen mode, which is like a blue, I think. They have Let's Get It On mode, Joe, where the whole room turns pink and then it plays some like sexy music on the TV, which is very Virgin and fun.
Just want to remind everyone that when we talked about you going on Virgin, I told everyone that I am not cool enough and I feel like it's still going to bear true by the time we're done hearing this. But yes, continue.
And yeah, everything is just very much integrated in there. I really like that the drapes are, they're motorized like you get in a fancy hotel, just stuff like that. So in order to accommodate the bed being able to convert, when the bed is in bed mode, there is this giant wooden block to the side of one side of the bed that is like this big square block where the kind of couch part would be. And basically what they do is they swing one of the twin beds out to make the L-shaped couch. So one stays in that form, in the normal bed formation, and the other one kind of goes horizontal. And the resulting thing is this big wooden box in your room that I told my wife that she had to sleep on the other side of the bed, Jasmine, because I knew I was going to stub my toe or something. And indeed, I ran into a passenger who broke her toe by hitting it on this wooden thing getting out of bed. It's just a really bad design because it's just exposed sort of wood or laminate or whatever it is. And
no storage or anything, so it's not like an ottoman. It's just like, I don't know, just like a physical thing in your way.
Yeah, to support the bed when it gets turned into couch mode. Now, you can request a lot of housekeeping stuff through the tablet, including for your bed to be made into the sofa mode. I tried 3 different days to get that done, and my housekeeper never did it. And so finally, I had a message guest services, and they sent somebody to do it. And the only reason I really wanted it was so I could review it and talk about it. I would never do this on a cruise. I think this is terrible. I think they should take this out. It's really pointless. And I don't think that big wooden thing is very nice. But the other thing is that in order to make this into a couch sofa combo, the beds are very, I don't know, not very comfortable. You know, I've been on a lot of cruises the last couple of years, including MSC, Royal Caribbean, Carnival, been on Norwegian quite a few times in the past. This is the most uncomfortable bed that I have slept on any cruise line. So that, and I think it's just because it's foam and it's basically a sofa. So that is a downside too. I feel like this is one of those things that they overthought and under-delivered on. But there are some really good parts of the room, including the tech. And like you said, that hammock outside. I've never been a guy, when I have a balcony cabin, to be out there a whole lot. Jasmine and I found ourselves kind of fighting over the hammock at some points because it was so nice to sit out there and lay on it. What a huge improvement over like deck chairs that you normally see on other cruise lines.
Yeah, it looks really cool. It kind of hangs from the ceiling, so it doesn't take up that much real estate when you're not using it. So, I mean, that hammock sounds pretty awesome. Definitely sounds like a highlight. But if the bed wasn't comfortable, that doesn't sound great. You were on the Valiant Lady, I think. And did you say what deck you were on? And yeah, for like you were like there for like 7 nights, right? So that uncomfortable bed must not have been great.
Yeah, Valiant Lady, which is their second cruise ship, and 8 nights, actually. So yeah, it was... I was not too happy, and Jasmine the same thing. And neither one of us have a huge amount of issues sleeping on different beds. As people know, we travel all the time. We're always on different beds. So it's not something that I typically have an issue with. But yeah, the hammock, just one more thing. I'm 6'2", you know, a bigger guy, and fit just fine. I mean, there was no issue. You're basically stretching. Once you get it stretched out, you fit completely within it. It's great. And there's still chairs too out there. So if you just want the more traditional experience, you can do it. The only other thing I want to talk about the cabin is the shower. So the bathroom is very small compared to other cruise ships. There's really only room for one person to stand in front of the mirror. Although the toilet, they have cutouts, so you're perfectly comfortable using the toilet. But the shower is huge. It's maybe double the size of what you see on other cruise lines. Feels like a normal shower. Like, it's great. It's probably the best shower I've ever seen in a standard cruise cabin. And I highly recommend that. I'm glad that they found a way to keep the bathroom relatively small so it could fit within their space constraints, but they gave most of that space to the shower, which is smart. Like people, you know, most of their customers are couples, I would imagine. And so if one person has to get ready, they can do it in the room while the other person's in the shower. I don't think a lot of people are using those tiny bathrooms to kind of use the mirror and get ready anyway. So I'm glad that they dedicated the real estate to the shower. Great, great shower, rain head, everything. Super cool. So I think overall I'd give the room like a 7 out of 10. And the only real downsides being that weird bed situation. But I liked the tech. I liked the hammock and a lot of what they're doing. And I really enjoyed at night kind of turning it into Zen mode and having the light blue LEDs and watching TV. It worked for me on every level.
That sounds great. I mean, I would love to hear about the food. Virgin makes a big deal about tipping being included or tips being included in your voyage fare. And they make a big deal about how great the food is and how many dining options there are. But I also hear that making reservations can be a bit difficult or annoying. So I'm curious your experiences with all that.
So Virgin makes a huge deal about the food on their ships. And there's 22 different outlets to eat, including a new take on the buffet. But Joe, you mentioned the app because you have to basically reserve everything in the app. And that's a huge problem. So I guess this is the part where I really complain and rip Virgin, because their app is absolutely terrible. I had seen reviews of this going back to Scarlet Lady, the debut of their first ship. And the experience is just so bad, Joe. It's especially when you get on the ship, the app doesn't work. It wouldn't see me as being on the ship. It didn't see my reservation. So for the first 2 hours that I got on the ship trying to make reservations for the restaurants and the shows, I couldn't even get in. And I don't really understand how they can not have fixed this, honestly. It's atrocious. It's atrocious. I don't want to underestimate how bad this is as an experience. And I'm very tech savvy. You know, we go to Disney World where you're very reliant on the app there. And so I'm used to that.
Which is also bad. At least.
I will say that the My Disney Experience app compared to Virgin's app is like butter. It's great.
Okay, just for context, in case you are not a Disney fan, which many of you are not, I just want to go on record and saying that the Disney app is one of the worst apps to use. Like, you get disconnected all the time, and then like things crash, and then you know sometimes it freezes, and you get logged out. So it is not great. So if Sean says that the Virgin app is worse than that, that is pretty bad.
Yeah. So like I said, when I got on board, it didn't recognize me for until late at night. So it said basically you need to connect to the ship's Wi-Fi and get into the app. And when I did that, it just says you need to connect to the ship's Wi-Fi. So it didn't recognize I was connected to the Wi-Fi. Thankfully, Jasmine's phone did. So I was able to get into the app to start. Now, most of the restaurants on this ship, the six sort of signature dining restaurants, these would be like specialty restaurants on other cruise lines. They're all included, but they all require reservations, as do many of the shows. And so when you get on board, a lot of people are hitting up the app and it's just really unusable. So I sat there for like 2 hours trying to get the app to work. And I'll just say the embarkation experience, very typical of other cruise lines, went really well. Nothing special other than you get on a little bit later because they allow passengers off. You know, they allow passengers to sleep in and get off the ship a little bit later, around 10:30, 11. So you're boarding the ship a little bit later than on other cruise lines, but nothing really special to talk about there. The terminal in Miami is beautiful, but get on board. And I'm just sitting there for 2 hours trying to get reservations because I had heard that you needed all of this. My big suggestion to people is if it's not working for you, which I talked to a lot of people during the week and universally it didn't work for anybody, is during sail away, you can generally, that's when I got all my reservations because everybody's looking at the beautiful sail away and they're not hitting up the app. My guess is they don't have enough server capacity and that's really an issue. So a lot of the problems that I had getting on didn't persist through the week, but occasionally it would just log you out. I still had times where it said I wasn't on ship's Wi-Fi during the week. There was one time when it made a reservation for a different day than what I had said. And so I ended up with two different reservations on the same day and then nothing for the other day, even though I know I had done it right. And it's just a really frustrating experience. I'm very tech savvy, but there was a lot of older people on the ship who didn't do that. And they ended up not being able to get show reservations, having to do standby at the restaurants. And it's just a really subpar experience and one that seems like it should be easy for Virgin to fix. Scarlet Lady debuted, I think, 2 years ago, and the complaints have been fairly consistent since then. So with that out of the way, let's talk about the restaurant. So Joe, every cruise ship has a buffet, right? Or just about every cruise ship has a buffet. It's sort of a staple of cruise ships, but Virgin has reimagined it into the galley, which is sort of like a hybrid food hall, I guess. But what's weird is some of the stands you have to go up and get the food, but most of them you order from a server. And so it really kind of is confusing as to the way it works, although I found the food to be pretty good. They have typical things like a salad station where they make a fresh tossed salad for you. They have a diner that's open 24 hours, giving you kind of diner-like food. Some of the interesting stuff too, they have bento boxes and sushi there. They also have a taco stand with like al pastor on a spit, ramen place, which the ramen is absolutely delicious there. So a lot of different types of food there. And I found the food overall pretty good in the galley. Although, like I said, it takes a couple of days to figure out what you can order and then what you have to go get yourself, which I don't understand. Just make it all or nothing. But yeah, overall, no complaints there. I think you're going to find that food is several levels above what you would find in a buffet on other cruise lines. And I really appreciated the variety, being able to go in there and get a tossed salad, being able to have the ramen. I had the ramen several different days you know, the bento boxes with the sushi, just being able to pick one of those up was really nice. The tacos were good. So I didn't really have much that I didn't like in the galley, other than, you know, the experience is a little confusing. And then around the ship, they have a few other venues. Like, they have a pizza place like you find on every other cruise line. They have a really nice high-end ice cream shop that has great ice cream to the level that you would probably see charged on other cruise lines as well. They have a place called the Dock House, which has like meat on a stick Mediterranean food. They have the Social House, which has games and stuff like that. But they also have like specialty hot dogs, like a Philly cheesesteak hot dog, things like that. So that's sort of like quick service. And then they have six main restaurants. And these are the ones you need the reservations for. And these replace the main dining room and specialty restaurants. And they're very good, I would say, for the most part, although there are some caveats. So here are the six restaurants. You have Razzle Dazzle, which they call their veggie forward restaurant, but they do serve meat. They have the Test Kitchen, which is supposed to like mimic a, I don't know, like a fancy tasting menu with like experimental weird foods. The menu I had, there's two menus and you can't really choose which day you get which menu. And when you're making your reservations, it doesn't tell you. And the menu that I had read wasn't very good and it was really terrible. And the whole setup of the Test Kitchen is really terrible too, because most people you're sitting at this bar type seating collectively and the servers just have to reach over your shoulder to serve you. It was our least favorite experience of the entire cruise was the Test Kitchen, although I heard the other menu is very good. So I don't know. They also have Pink Agave, which is upscale Mexican. Very, very good. I would say Pink Agave is the most popular restaurant, so that's the one you want to grab your reservations for first. They have Extra Virgin, which is an Italian restaurant. The Wake, which is their steakhouse. And then Gunbae, which is Korean barbecue on a cruise ship, Joe, which is quite an interesting thing. Although I noticed it's the least popular restaurant. That was the one where you could find reservations later in the cruise, mainly because it's more of a experience, I would say. You have to sit collectively with other people. So they sit six people at a table. You don't get to cook the meat yourself like you would on land. And then they do this whole like drinking game thing where you do, you know, to kind of get everybody in the spirit and everybody knowing each other. So I feel like I would have gone back to Gunbae a second time, but I didn't want to go through the whole hassle of all of that. And I think a lot of people probably did that. So I think the food overall was really good. There were a few misses, but overall, this is much better food than you're going to find for free, certainly on other cruise lines. And, you know, the menus are pretty extensive. It's not as big as a restaurant on land or anything, but generally you're going to have 4 to 6 entrees, a lot of different options for appetizers and sides. They even have secret menus at some of the restaurants, like Razzle Dazzle has a buttered chicken, which is on their secret menu, and a steak, which is really good on their secret menu, even though that's the vegetarian restaurant. There is steak just about everywhere at all these restaurants. The best steak that we had was the one at Pink Agave, believe it or not, the Mexican restaurant. So that's highly recommended. Like I said, I didn't really eat a lot that I didn't like there. And I think this is really a selling point for people who love food, who love variety. They also have a couple other things like a poke bowl place for lunch, just a lot, just anything you could think of, just a huge variety of different types of food. Got to try it all. And if you're a foodie, I think this is definitely the cruise for you.
So yeah, I've definitely heard that as well. I have travel agent friends who love Virgin and have sailed a few times, but they definitely think Gunbae is their least favorite restaurant of at least the sit-down restaurants, which is weird. I don't know how you make Korean barbecue not work, but I guess that's how it is. Now, I'm curious, you know, the cruise kind of stereotype is that the buffet is always open and there's always a ton to eat. So without a buffet, but with the quick service options, you feel like they are open enough and enough variety that you got your fill of eating whatever you wanted?
Yeah, so some of the venues inside of the galley are only open for certain hours. Like I said, the bento boxes are always there. There is the Diner and Dash, which is their diner, which is open 24 hours. So you can always get diner type food 24 hours in the galley. The pizza is always open till about 2 a.m. as well. So there are options definitely late at night. And I felt like there was a good variety of stuff. And the experience was pretty good. Having to order seems like it would be a pain, but there's a lot of servers always. And I will go to say that the service on this ship was great overall. One of the interesting concepts Virgin does is all the tips are included. So you're not expected to tip, although you can. Like if you have really good service, you can tip on top of that, but they're not going to ask you for a tip and they're not going to expect one. And I found the service to be absolutely great, with the exception of the customer service. I heard numerous people complain about Sailor Services, which is their guest services. I had one interaction, because the other thing I forgot to mention with the cabin was my cabin air conditioning didn't work that well. I've been on, 11, 12 cruises in the last year and a half. This was the warmest cabin I had seen, and I wanted them to check it out after a couple days. So I went down and asked guest services, and she basically shamed me and said I didn't have the balcony door closed. I said, it's been like this for 3 days, and she was just very rude to me. And I heard other people talking about that. So outside of that interaction, not just really good service, probably the best crew I've seen anywhere. The happiest crew, the friendliest crew. Really want to give them props for that. The other issue I had with customer service, which I'm still trying to work out, is that they charged me. They have these little stuffed animals in the room, and they have like a decorative bottle opener that you can take. The bottle opener is $25. The stuffed animal is $12. Well, my housekeeper charged me for those, which I did not take out of the room. And I wasn't charged until after I got off the ship. And I immediately emailed them. This was about a week ago. 2 days ago, I got a new folio, which still had the charges on there. And so now I have to follow up with them. And that's a really poor kind of follow up. So I think their guest services needs a little bit of work, but their bartenders, their waiters, their entertainers, their staff is all amazing. So I want to talk really quickly about entertainment. Is they have a very different take on entertainment. And starting with, this is Virgin. So they have a resident drag queen on the show with a lot of very interesting, fun shows that come along with that. And they have two main venues, the Manor, which is their nightclub, but they also do, they had like a British comedy troupe in there, and they do a variety of different shows in there as well. And then they have the Red Room, which is their main theater. And it's unlike a theater on any other ship. They do have a typical setup like a theater, but then they also can reconfigure the room. They have this show that's their, I think their flagship show called Dual Reality, which is a modern circus-like take on Romeo and Juliet, which doesn't make it sound all that great. And I had heard great things about this show, and it's absolutely incredible. Like one of the favorite things I've ever seen on a cruise ship. And if you can, sit on the floor towards the middle, because you're basically in the middle of the show. That's all I'll say. I didn't know that when I picked my seat. I just wanted to get something convenient to film it. But I felt like I was in the middle of the show. I felt it was incredible. The entertainment altogether was really high quality. The staff that does all of the events around the ship is great. The dancers are great. Like even on their beach club in Bimini, they had their entertainers come and do different dance-offs, stuff like that. And then I guess we should talk about Scarlet Night, Joe, which is their flagship, sort of their replacement for a formal night on a cruise ship, where the entire ship turns red. Every passenger dresses up in red. They have entertainment all throughout the ship for hours and hours and hours. This has a whole backstory with a show where they have the singer kind of tell you the backstory of this octopus, and you can look up what the story is. It culminates at the end of the night with everybody on the ship on the pool deck dancing. It was one of the funnest times on a cruise ship. And like I said, they have so much entertainment. The entire ship transforms into red, and every venue on the ship has something going on, from like, from dance-offs to, we did reverse charades in one little, in the champagne bar, which was like a 5-minute thing. She's like, do you want to do this? And then, like I said, I've never seen, they have the white hot parties on other cruise lines, but I've never seen participation seem like 100%, people just having fun. And I will say, I had heard this before about Virgin Voyages. The other people on the cruise, very friendly. Like, this is probably the most social cruise I've ever seen. Everybody really happy to be there. Everybody had the same gripes I did that I've mentioned here. Some problems with customer service, the app not working, not being able to get reservations. But universally, if you asked them if they would do it again, absolutely. And that was sort of my bottom line here, was that it felt different. And I think the product that they're coming up with is great. And I think over time, they're going to fix a lot of these small issues. But even with them, I'm willing to overlook them, because this was, first off, this is a cruise for people who don't like cruises, but it's just something so different, even if you do like cruises, that you want to enjoy it. Some people have compared it to like a boutique hotel on the sea, and it definitely feels like that in the way it's decorated. It doesn't feel like a traditional cruise ship, and I sort of agree with that. There are a few downsides. The pools are way too small, but way too small. There's not enough activities during the day. There's a lot of focus on fitness classes, which is great. And the entertainment that they have is really high quality, but there are gaps in the day. If you're somebody who on the C day wants to have an activity every 30 minutes and go from activity to activity, there are definitely gaps, and there are a lot of paid experiences like alcohol tastings and classes. And so if you're not doing those, there can be gaps. But it has a really great running track. The gym is probably the best I've seen on a cruise ship, really world class, although they put it flanking both sides of the pool area, which is one of the reasons the pool deck is so small, which is a downside. And then the last sort of like signature thing that they did is this net that hangs, you know, 10 stories over the ship where you can lay on it. Kind of a gimmick, but fun. But the other thing is, Joe, kind of going back to the last episode we recorded together, remember I was worried about them having issues with service and the capacity and stuff, because people had said once the ship gets past 1,500 people, they were really struggling. On this sailing, it was about 80% full, which is about 2,200 people. Didn't experience that at all. There was always space on the ship. You could always find quiet areas. So that wasn't an issue at all for me.
And I think they've really also nailed the social aspect of cruising that, I think maybe other cruise lines will try to mimic. It is funny, though. The social aspect is probably what I'm least interested in from Virgin Voyages. Like, I do not like talking to new people and not super interested in that. But of course, you know, I know I'm not talking to the most extroverted person either. You know, you're an introvert yourself, Sean.
Yeah, I'm similar to you in that I'm not outwardly going to make 100 friends on a cruise. And so you can pick and choose, right? But I did find a lot of good experiences talking to other people and enjoyed that. It's a very adult-centric cruise. The entertainment's very adult-centric. There's some crude stuff, obviously, and like drag shows. I don't know if people are familiar with what's in drag shows, but definitely some adult stuff. But you can avoid that if you're easily offended, I suppose. But I don't think if you're easily offended, you're the kind of person that's going to be on this cruise ship anyway. I think one big kind of question for the future, and we were debating this, there was that recent deal with Virgin Red where you could redeem for, like, the cruise I went on, you could have redeemed for 100,000 thank you points, basically, transferred to Virgin. And the shorter ones were cheaper than that. That's not available now, but Joe and I were debating whether this was going to come back. I think it will, because they are bringing on their two other ships later this year, so they're about to double their capacity, but there's no guarantee that those deals will come back. But there is a miles and points angle. Hopefully there'll be good value redemptions on these ships. I do feel like the one downside long-term for them, once people have cruised on them a few times, the four ships are largely going to be identical. Same restaurants. The decor is slightly different between the Scarlet Lady and Valiant Lady. We haven't learned 100% what the differences will be with the new ships that are debuting later this year, but we do know basically the restaurants are the same, the experience is the same, and I wonder if it's going to get a little tired without the variation there. And, you know, there are some other issues like not having a good outdoor promenade deck, where other new cruise ships have those. Every brand, every line is bringing those out with great outdoor spaces. So there are some downsides there, but overall, they did really well, and I can't wait to see as they fix these little things. And then, you know, hopefully they're successful enough to maybe build a new class of ship so you can get a little variety down the line to make you want to go back. But they do have the highest rebooking rate of any cruise line in the industry. That's people that are on board that put money down towards another cruise. And I think that says a lot. Like I said, I've never heard more complaints, like grumblings throughout a cruise. Well, if you press somebody, they say, absolutely, I can't wait to go on this again. So just a lot of those little things, but it all adds up to a great experience. Scarlet Knight, incredible. Yeah, I mean, I loved it. I really did, even though I was very frustrated at moments, and just to be very honest. But to me, the product outshines the issues, and hopefully they'll get that stupid app fixed.
Bringing things back full circle, it sounds a lot like Disney. People have a lot to complain about, but in the end, they keep coming back and are going to come back for more.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, if anybody has any specific questions, they can reach out to me, and I'd be more than happy to answer them. And that's going to do it for this week's show. Joe, where can people find you when they're not listening to this fine podcast?
You can find me at As Joe Flies all over social media. If you're looking to book a Disney trip or a cruise and you're paying with cash, you can reach out to me, Joseph Chung, at travelmation.net. That's M as in Mary. And I'd be happy to help you plan your trip. How about you, Sean?
At Miles to Memories all over social media. You can find all of our posts, everything at milestomemories.com. Still doing Vegas stuff on YouTube, youtube.com/milestomemories. If you want to check me and Mark out, talking about Las Vegas. Thanks so much for listening. Talk to you next time.
See ya.